The Spy Who Clutched a Playing Card, Edward D. Hawke. During February and March, the Gulf of Finland was always icebound, and this winter proved to be no exception. The flat stretch of snow which covered the ice sparkled in the afternoon sun, broken only occasionally by the tracks of a passing patrol vehicle or the irregular trail of some winter creature. Near one shore, in an area where man rarely ventured during these frozen months, a single frost-crusted truck rested silently on great balloon snow tires. At the back of the truck, a man dressed in white worked at a sort of drill that was boring through the snow and frozen earth toward some unseen goal. He worked quickly in the cold, glancing now and then at the distant white horizon as if fearing interruption. Finally, deciding somehow that he was nearing his goal, he slowed the drill and carefully withdrew it from the hole. From the rear of this truck, he pulled a coil of wire and some insulated tools. He was stooping over the hole, intent on his work, when the single shot came, a flat, echoing sound that swept quickly over the terraces of snow and then was gone. No other sound followed, and there was nothing to confirm its passing except that the figure in white no longer worked by his truck. Now he was crumbled to the ground, and already the shifting snow, like desert sand or lazy waves, was beginning to lap and pull at his body. Hastings had phoned Rand just after 9, asking him to see a certain Mr. Green from Washington. When the visitor entered the Office of Concealed Communications a half hour later, Rand needed only a single glance to know that the man was from the CIA. He hoped that the Americans were a bit more circumspect in their choice of agents for other countries. Rand had never yet met one in London who didn't seem to shout his profession with all the reticence of a screeching peacock. Mr. Green was no exception. Tall, angular, vaguely handsome, the sort who'd gone through college on the debating team and worked out Saturday afternoons in the school gym. He'd be married with 3 children because that was the proper number to have these days, and his wife wouldn't object to his work because on this level it was no more risky than selling insurance.
"You're Rand," he said, holding out his hand. "They think very highly of your work in Washington."
"I'm pleased to hear that,"
Rand said, not believing a word of it. The man obviously wanted a favor.
"We've had an odd sort of report from the Scandinavian area. Washington thought that in the interests of time you might be able to give us some help at this end."
Rand smiled slightly and offered the man a cigarette.
"Anything I can do."
"A man named Alfred Penny was killed 2 days ago near the Gulf of Finland. He was shot by a high-powered rifle from some distance away."
"Alfred Penny? I don't know the name."
"He's had many names. Glass, Blanco, Madrigal, to name a few. He was a specialist, an expert in all sorts of electronic listening devices, telephone taps, things like that."
"An expert for whom? The Russians or our side?"
Green leaned back in his chair.
"Neither side, surprisingly. He was a British subject originally, which is one of the reasons we're getting you into it. But for the past 5 years, he's worked for an organization called SPAD. Ever hear of them?"
"Of course," Rand replied.
SPAD was a private intelligence organization headquartered in Paris and West Berlin, named after a popular French fighter plane of the First World War. Supposedly working for the West, it had been accused on occasion of supplying information to the highest bidder, East or West.
"We don't know who killed him, but we do know what he was up to out there. He was tapping into the hot line between Washington and Moscow."
"What?"
Rand came forward in his chair.
"Why in hell would he be doing that?"
Green shrugged.
"We're questioning SPAD about that right now. They claim his mission wasn't authorized, but we're not so certain."
Rand was frowning at the ceiling.
"But what would he gain by tapping into the hotline? The thing is never used. It's for the ultimate emergency. The day the hotline has to be used, people like Penny and the rest of us will be beyond caring."
"Are you familiar with its operation, Mr. Rand? The hotline is not a voice connection, as so many people seem to believe. It's a teletype, actually, with a one-time tape system to encipher messages."
Rand nodded.
The one-time system had been perfected in 1918 by an officer of the U.S. Army Signal Corps. It used a teletypewriter tape perforated with a patternless, non-repetitive series of holes to add electrical impulses to the plain text message. Decipherment was absolutely impossible unless the receiver had an identical tape at his end. After being used once, that section of tape was destroyed. Germany had used the system in the 1920s and Russia in the 1930s, but the necessity for having a disposable tape as lengthy as the messages prevented its universal use, especially on battlefields. A few Russian agents like Rudolf Abel and the Krogers had used variations of the one-time system, and it was presently well regarded by the United Nations, the International Monetary Fund, and a number of other groups. Since both the U.S. State Department and the Russian government were users, it was a natural selection for the Hotlink line.
"So even if Penny tapped the line, he couldn't decipher it," Rand observed. "He'd be listening to a line that carried no messages, and he couldn't have understood them if it had. So why did he try to do it?"
Green shrugged again. "I thought you might have some ideas, being the head of Double C. Though actually that was only one reason for my visit. When they noticed something amiss with the line and went to investigate, they found Penny's body. He had a list of names on him."
"Foolish," Rand snorted.
"Not so foolish. They were apparently a list of contacts. The list was hidden in the heel of his boot."
"Do people still do that sort of thing?" Rand marveled.
"They do. Here's the list." He passed Rand a folded slip of paper. It was headed London, and there followed three names: Geoffrey Crayon, Hal Whitehood, Leo Vandor.
"Interesting," Rand commented. "A list of contacts, you think?"
"What else?"
"Well, I can think of a number of things. For instance, perhaps Penny's killer planted the list on his body."
"No chance. As near as we can tell from the footprints, the killer went nowhere near the body. We mainly wanted your help with these names. Any chance they're not what they seem? Of course, Vandor is the red spy awaiting trial, and Whitehood is the well-known movie star. But what about Crayon? The only one I know is in Washington Irving." Rand smiled at the man.
"I didn't realize the CIA was so literary. Oh, I doubt very much that this is the Geoffrey Crayon of the sketchbook, despite the fact that the book first appeared in London. No, I rather think that this is Geoffrey Crayon, the contract bridge expert. He plays often in tournaments around London, and he writes a weekly column in the Express."
"Could any of these people be linked to an organization like SPAD?"
"Well, Leo Vandor is a known agent. I suppose he'd be the most likely."
Green frowned out the window, where the winter sun was making one of its two brief appearances. "Since this is primarily a communications matter and could possibly involve the use of a cipher, we were wondering if you could talk to these three men, question them about Alfred Penny."
"I'd be glad to," Rand replied. "But you don't usually learn much from spies by formal questioning."
"You don't learn much, but you just might force the hand of one of them."
"If there's a hand to be forced," Rand observed. "If the whole thing isn't just a cover-up for something bigger."
"What could be bigger than the hotline?" It was Rand's turn to stare out the window.
"I don't know. I wish I did know sometimes what the other side's thinking."
When Rand went to see Whitehood the following morning, he took Parkinson with him. Parkinson was the youngest and most promising of Rand's half-dozen assistants in Double C, a sandy-haired cipher expert just 3 years out of Cambridge, who always called his superior Sir.
"Have you seen any of Whitehood's films, Parkinson?"
Rand asked while they waited in the studio's reception room for the actor to appear.
"Those spy things, sir. They're really wild, wilder than the Bonds." "Do you think he could possibly be living his role off the screen?"
"I hope not, sir. Not a woman in London would be safe."
When he finally appeared, Whitehood was brisk and bristling. He looked much like the press release photos which Rand had studied, except that the boyish smile was nowhere in evidence.
"Make it fast," he said. "I'm due back on the set."
Rand introduced them and said,
"This matter concerns a man named Alfred Penny, who lived here in London for a number of years. Did you know him?"
"Never heard the name."
The actor was impatient, restless in his chair.
"Is that all?"
"He died recently. Your name was found on the body."
"Perhaps he was a fan,"
Whitehood said with an unconcerned shrug.
"I doubt that very much."
"Well, I don't know your Mr. Penny, and I really have no further time to spend with you."
"Just one more question,"
Rand said,
"and then we'll let you go. Are you familiar with SPAD?"
"Who?"
"S-P-A-D.
"Airplane, wasn't it?"
the actor said, but Rand thought he caught a fleeting spark of something, fear in the man's eyes.
"I think that's all for now,"
Rand said, getting to his feet.
"Thank you for seeing us."
"Always glad to help the government,"
Whitehood said, and disappeared quickly through swinging doors. When they were outside, Parkinson asked,
"What do you think, sir? Was he telling the truth?"
"I don't know. I don't even know what Green expected me to find."
Rand bit pensively at his lower lip for a moment, and then took out a pack of American cigarettes.
"Look, call ahead and see if we can talk with Leo Vandor. He had to be in court for his arraignment this morning, and they weren't certain what time he'd be back in his cell."
Rand stood by the car, smoking his cigarette, marveling at the second straight day of winter sunshine. The temperature was still a frosty 35, but he thought it might warm up by afternoon. Parkinson came running from the corner phone booth a moment later, his face flushed with excitement. Rand's heart skipped a beat, and he threw away the cigarette.
"What is it, Parkinson?"
"Vandor, sir. He's escaped. Broke away from the guards while they were taking him to court."
Leo Vandor had been arrested just before Christmas for violating the Official Secrets Act. Although the actual details of his espionage had only been vaguely reported thus far in the public press, Rand knew the outline of the case quite well. Vandor was an East European who'd come to England 10 years earlier as a refugee from the Russians. He'd lived a quiet life as the managing editor of a small circulation poetry magazine, apparently acting as a Russian agent during all this time. His technique for receiving and passing on secrets was simplicity itself. Russian agents in the United States and other countries submitted poems to Vandor's magazine, poems with intricate messages hidden in the text, by cipher or microdot. These poems were rejected by Vandor, who simply put them in return envelopes addressed to cover addresses behind the Iron Curtain. Even if a mail check was being maintained, it showed only that certain people in both the United States and Russia submitted manuscripts to the same poetry magazine in London. But the method had finally been detected, and somehow American and British counterintelligence agents had been tipped off. Vandor was arrested, and in his possession at the time they found a mass of figures that translated into the orbits of a number of super-secret American satellites.
"And now he's escaped," Parkinson said.
Rand had a rare twinge of uncertainty. It was hard to believe that Vandor's escape was tied into the death of Penny, and yet... He got on the phone and spoke briefly with Hastings, arranging another meeting with Green, the CIA man. Then he rejoined Parkinson.
"There's a third name on that list," he said grimly. "I think we'd better pay a fast visit to Mr. Geoffrey Crayon, the contract bridge expert."
Crayon lived high above the London streets in one of the tallest and newest of urban apartment buildings. There were 2 stone lions by the front door, but once inside everything was chrome and glass, including the silent elevator that lifted them toward the top-floor penthouse. Rand pushed the buzzer and waited. Presently, a peephole opened in the massive oak door and a voice said,
"Yes, state your business."
"I'm Rand, Department of Concealed Communications. Here's my identification. We'd like a word with you, sir, that is, if you're Geoffrey Crayon."
"I'm Crayon."
"Would you open the door, please?"
"What's it about?"
"It's a matter of national security."
"I'll be with you in a moment."
They stood waiting, and nothing happened. After a few moments, Rand pushed the buzzer again. Still, there was nothing.
"Is there a back way out of here, Parkinson?"
"Just those stairs by the elevator, I'd imagine, sir. He didn't go down those."
"Think we can break down this door?"
It's Oak, sir.
Rand's heart was beating faster.
I'm afraid something's wrong.
Maybe he's getting dressed.
The elevator doors slid open and a uniformed Bobby emerged.
What's going on here? He asked.
Rand flashed his identification.
We're trying to see Mr. Crayon, officer.
That's so. Well, you'd better come downstairs with me then. Mr. Crayon just leaped to his death from the penthouse terrace.
It was after dark, but Rand was still in his little office overlooking the Thames, sitting with a cold cup of coffee and a copy of the late evening paper. The story had made a stop press box on page one beneath a headline which read, Bridge Expert Dies Clutching 10 of Clubs. Rand tossed the paper aside as the CIA man entered the office.
You've had a busy day,
Green said, sitting in the same chair he'd occupied before.
Yes, I have. I was planning to see three people. The actor knew nothing, the spy escaped from custody, and the bridge expert committed suicide. I'd say I scored an absolute zero.
No, not at all. At least you started things moving. What about Crayon? Any chance he was murdered?
Rand shook his head.
None whatsoever. He thought we were coming to arrest him, and he took the quickest way out. But what interests me is that on the way to his death, he paused long enough to go through a deck of cards and select a 10 of clubs to clutch in his hand.
Interesting, Green admitted. Any idea why?
A message of some sort? But what? And to whom?
The CIA man shifted in his chair.
I have someone who may be able to help us there. We're holding a woman who was Alfred Penny's mistress. Want to see her?
Rand hesitated, but only for a moment. He had a feeling he was already into this thing more deeply than he should be, more deeply than his official position called for. Still, something was afoot, and it might be crucial.
All right, he agreed. Let's go.
Her name was Marcia Mills, and she might have been a fashion model in her sleek miniskirt that seemed all wavy lines and garish colors. The sleeveless style of her blouse revealed a bruised right shoulder. Rand hadn't believed that girls really dressed like that, even in London. He'd preferred to view the entire thing as some wishful fantasy on the part of the fashion industry. But here was one in the flesh, who sat with crossed knees, was nonchalantly smoking a cigarette and telling them she was a schoolteacher.
A progressive girls' school, you know.
Of course,
Rand said.
And I can't understand why this man,
a motion toward Green,
should hold me here. Am I under arrest or something?
The place was a little office on Lower Thames Street, not far from the Billingsgate Market, in an area of the city hardly expected to harbor the London headquarters of the CIA. Green was present, and so was another man who didn't speak. They were obviously waiting for Marcia Mills to start talking, and she knew it.
You're not under arrest, Green told her. We just want you to tell us about Alfred Penny.
I haven't seen him in months.
The CIA man smiled.
Correction. You flew to Finland with him just last week. And when he was killed a few days ago, you were registered at the New Helsinki Hotel as Mrs. Alfred Penny. Does that refresh your memory?
She stubbed out her cigarette and avoided their eyes.
What do you want to know? Can we work out a deal?
Maybe. Tell us why he went there, Green prodded.
I don't know.
Was it a mission for SPAD?
Who?
I don't think you're really trying, Miss Mills. You can end up in a lot of trouble, you know.
She seemed to decide then.
All right, I'll give it to you straight. If you'll just let me go. A deal?
A deal.
Alfred was one of the top men in SPAD. I don't have to tell you about them. He had access to more inside information about double agents than many of you people. A while back, he decided to strike out on his own. He had some big scheme that involved the flight to Finland and then contacting three men in London.
Rand was now interested.
Who were the three men?
He asked.
I don't know their names. One was Russian, one was British, and the third was a SPAD man. Alfred was going to offer them something and make a huge amount of money.
You mean he would sell something to the highest bidder?
I don't know the details.
Did he tell anyone else he was going to Finland?
No, no one. I'm sure of that.
Green took Rand aside and asked,
What do you think?
She was much too willing to talk, but you can't hold her. I suggest releasing her and watching where she goes. It just might prove interesting.
All right, the American agreed. They left the little office after Green had given quick instructions to the other man. In the car back to Rand's building, Green said,
At least it tells us something, since we have those three names. We know Vandor is the Russian, and Crayon couldn't have been the British agent or he wouldn't have killed himself when you came to question him.
Rand agreed.
So Crayon was the man from Spad, and that leaves Whitehood as our own man. I'll check for confirmation.
It doesn't explain why Crayon killed himself clutching a playing card.
I have an idea about that,
Rand said.
A code of some sort?
More in the nature of a dying message, I think. An improvised code.
Directed to Spad?
Possibly,
Rand said. But the whole thing bothered him. There were too many pieces in the puzzle. Three separate espionage organizations, a murder, a suicide, an escape, a dying message. Too many pieces. Back in his office, Rand tried unsuccessfully to reach Hastings in internal security. Finally, he coded a quick message that read, Urgent. Know if Whitehood is our own man. He sealed it in an envelope and gave it to young Parkinson.
Find Hastings and get me a quick answer on this,
he said.
Where will you be, sir?
I'm going back to see Whitehood again. He's the only one of the three that's left.
This time the actor seemed more friendly and willing to talk. He sat in a relaxed posture against a vivid green sofa and said,
It's good to see you again, Mr. Rand. I'm sorry if I appeared a bit brisk earlier. We were filming, you know. I'm always more relaxed here in my apartment.
Rand gave him a smile, trying to match the open friendliness.
It's about Alfred Penny again, I'm afraid. Since I saw you last, there have been some rather startling developments. A Russian spy named Vandor has escaped from custody, and a man named Crayon has committed suicide.
Should I know either of them? He asked blandly.
Their names were with yours on Alfred Penny's body.
Oh?
Rand decided to wait no longer.
Look, Whitehood, I have reason to believe we're on the same side of this thing. I've asked for official confirmation that you're one of us, so let's not beat about the bush.
What do you want to know?
That's more like it.
Rand paused, then hurried on, feeling more sure of himself.
The man named Crayon died clutching a playing card. 10 of clubs. Mean anything to you?
The actor shrugged.
In some fortune-telling systems, it means gambling. Perhaps this Crayon frequented the gambling clubs around London.
A possibility,
Rand agreed, and one he hadn't thought of.
But I look at it this way. Crayon wasn't just anybody. He was a well-known contract bridge expert. In his final moment of life, if he had to get a message to his people, the Spad, for instance, he would realize that a playing card clutched in his hand would certainly make news. As it happened, the papers headlined the fact. Somewhere, someone noted that fact and read the message.
The telephone buzzed and Whitehood answered it. He listened for a moment, then passed it to Rand.
It's for you.
Rand here.
This is Parkinson, sir. I have the reply from Hastings.
Good. You can give it to me clear, but no names.
Hastings says he's not one of us, sir.
What?
Rand wasn't sure he'd heard correctly.
He's not ours, sir. They think he's Spad.
Rand hung up the phone and turned to face the pistol held firmly in Whitehood's hand.
You want to hear about it?
Whitehood asked.
All right, I'll tell you the whole thing.
He smiled slightly.
Before I kill you, that is.
You're Spad, of course.
Of course. I was Penny's partner until he got this crazy scheme and struck out on his own.
Then Crayon was the Russian and Vandor?
Vandor is a British double agent. He was allowed to escape. Penny and I uncovered the fact quite by accident. It was Vandor himself who tipped off the British to raid his own office and find the information on the American space satellites. And that, of course, is the key to the whole filthy business.
How?
The Americans have launched several satellites from Vandenberg Air Force Base in California. These satellites in the Discoverer, Samos, Midas, and Vela Hotel series are designed to detect nuclear explosions and rocket launches. The satellite launches are usually reported without much detail in the public press, but the exact mission of each satellite is highly classified.
So?
Last year, the Americans launched a new satellite with a superior television eye. It can detect anything on the ground, even through clouds. The Russians have obtained the orbit of all current satellites, but they do not know which one carries the powerful new lens.
What good would it do if they did know?
They could move or hide the secret equipment when they know that particular satellite is passing overhead. Because of the rotation of the Earth, it passes over the same spot only twice a month.
So they needed to know what?
A date, only a date. The date the satellite was launched by the Americans. When they know which one it is, they will then know its orbits.
The information was sent to Vandor?
Yes, but of course he was a British agent. Unfortunately, it was also sent to Geoffrey Crayon of SPAD. I believe it was passed to him during a bridge game.
So the 10 of clubs must stand for a date, the 10th of some month?
Whatever it is, the Russians have it by now.
If they correctly read the message of the card.
Whitehood steadied the pistol in his hand.
I'll let the Russians worry about that. I've talked too much already.
Why do you think you have to kill me?
Because I'm taking over where Penny left off. I might even take over with his mistress, too. I can't have you or the CIA holding me in London while you try to solve this satellite thing.
Did you kill Penny?
Of course not, but since he's dead, I can't let the chance to get all that money go to waste. Goodbye, Mr. Rand.
And his finger tightened on the trigger.
Wait, at least you can tell me what Penny was up to out there. Why was he tapping the hotline?
Whitehood smiled.
You really don't know, do you?
No.
He wasn't going to intercept messages. He was going to send his own. He was going to use the hotline as an exclusive espionage reporting service directly to the heads of state in Washington or Moscow, whichever would pay more. With his contacts from SPAD, he would have had a foolproof system. No middlemen, no chance of the message going astray.
That's fantastic. No government would agree to it.
More fantastic than satellites in the sky? More fantastic than double agents like Vandor? I think not, Mr. Rand. In fact, I am going to try it myself.
It was then that young Parkinson came crashing through the window behind Whitehood. He landed on the spy's back and toppled him to the floor just as the gun exploded. Then, gasping, bleeding from glass cuts, he looked up and said,
"I thought you might need some help, sir."
Just before dawn the next morning, Rand found himself shaking hands with Leo Vandor at the Thames River dock. The CIA man was there, too, and Hastings from Internal Security. Vandor was a big man who looked exactly like his pictures.
"Pleased to meet you, Mr. Rand," he said. "Even the Russians speak highly of you."
"I'm the one who should be pleased," Rand said. "You're slipping back behind the curtain?"
"Of course, that is my job."
"If SPAD knows you're on our side, the Russians might know it, too."
The tall man only shrugged.
"That is the chance I have always taken."
Green shifted his feet.
"We must know if the Russians correctly read the message of the playing card. If so, the satellite with the special lens is useless."
Vandor smiled slightly.
"I understand Mr. Rand has deduced the card's meaning."
Rand nodded absently. He'd explained it all a half dozen times already that night.
"The date of a satellite launching last year from Vandenberg Air Force Base. Well, it's doubtful if they ever launch more than one satellite a week, so all Crayon really had to convey was the week that particular satellite went up. Now there's one thing a deck of cards has in common with the calendar year. 52 cards, 52 weeks.
And in contract bridge, the 52 cards have a specific rank. 4 suits, the highest, spades, the lowest, clubs. In order of rank, you start with the ace of spades and go down to the 2, then the same with hearts, diamonds, and clubs in that order. The ace of spades, therefore, is card number 1 in the deck, making the 2 of clubs card number 52.
Making the 10 of clubs card number 44, Green said. Rand nodded.
Last year, the 44th week was the week of October 30th, and that's when the special satellite went up.
Do you think the Russians got the message?
If I figured it out, I'm sure they did too,
Rand said. Vandor shook hands once more. My launch is waiting. I must say goodbye. Rand watched him go, thinking that he might be seeing the last of a very brave man. Then, as he went back through the dawn mist to the warmth of the waiting car, he heard Green say,
We still don't know who killed Alfred Penny at the beginning of this whole affair. Was it Spad or the Russians or who?
Rand settled back in the seat as the car started.
I doubt if any of them would have bothered. Why kill a man bent on such a foolish mission? Besides, no one knew he was there.
But someone did kill him, Green insisted.
I think it's out of our territory,
Rand said.
I think the motive was private rather than political. It's no sort of evidence, but you must have noticed that Marsha Mills had a bruised right shoulder, the kind of bruise the recoil of a high-powered rifle might leave. She was in Helsinki with him, and it wouldn't be the first time a woman killed her lover.
Green's mouth dropped open.
I never thought of that.
Rand smiled and closed his eyes. It had been a long day and a long night.